The question was asked, we often encounter people who have not learned a lot, and they will look at a website or a book of biblical criticism and start quoting A or B or C and question things in our tradition or in Tanakh or in Chazal. And when we're challenged by them, so sometimes it can feel overwhelming, and their arguments can certainly feel overwhelming. What's one supposed to answer? So it's a little bit tricky. In Chazal often speak about people who make these arguments as being very deceitful. And I find that when people are plagiarizing in their arguments, that's one level of dishonesty. I also think that in all honesty, to have a discussion about something when you know almost nothing about it is another level of dishonesty. And it's a level of intellectual dishonesty where I'd say, you know, let's take an example. If I came and I told you, you know, quantum physics, I know they think they got it right, but there are so many contradictions, there are so many holes. And then I go and I quote some parts of a Wikipedia article to you, and I explain to you why quantum physics makes no sense. So the logical answer would be, hey buddy, how much did you study quantum physics? What do you know about quantum physics? Do you know 80% of the proofs of why it's right? I'm not saying 100%, you know, 50% of the proofs why it's right. You have questions, fine. But what do you understand about it? Let's be honest here. You studied it for all of nothing. You don't know basic physics, and you're asking about the theories of the highest levels of physics. It's a little bit rash. And I think that that's, you want to ask questions. You could ask questions, but you want to be intellectually honest. Why don't you study it from the ground up? See if you understand it. You know, someone came with an argument and said, where do we find anyone before Rabbi Akiva speaking about Mashiach ben Yosef? Initially, I was taken by the argument. Then I said to myself, wait, Rav Shri Agon points out that you hardly find Tanoim and Shas that were before Rabbi Akiva. So why do you choose that topic? Choose any topic, as we discussed in the intro to the concept of the Shulchan Aruch. You don't find almost in Shas Tanoim that predated Rabbi Akiva about any topic. So if I wouldn't have remembered that, then boy, I'm stumped. Wait a second, he's got a point. No, he doesn't have a point. Because if you take a broader view, that's not a point. You ask that question about all of Shas. Okay, they asked that question 2,000 years ago. You can accept the answer, you cannot accept the answer, whatever you want. I'm not going to tell you what to buy into. But at first glance, you say, wait, that's a question. Then you realize it's not. Someone came over to me and said, well, if Jericho really happened, how come we're not finding... how come we're not finding archaeological evidence? And I thought for a minute, and I said, well, the Talmud says there were three places named Jericho. How do you know they're looking in the right place? And then I happened to come across a place where the Radak points out that the Jericho of the Tanakh was in a totally different place than the Jericho we see today. And actually, if you want to be intellectually honest, then the description of Jericho as being the key place to conquer when you enter Israel certainly lends itself to the idea that Jericho was bordering the Jordan, bordering the crossing of the Jordan, and Jericho was the key city that was there to ensure the safety of all the other cities, that anyone who would try to cross the Jordan would be attacked by the people of Jericho. That's totally different than the locations they're researching of where Jericho was. So you hear the argument at first glance and you say, that's a good question. Then you start analyzing more of the text and you say, but who said they're looking in the right place? So someone came to me yesterday, and said, how come we have so many archaeological findings with the writings of the Hebrew alphabet? That's what we call Ktav Ivri. And someone, a relative of mine, came and asked me, how could we have all these halachos about the letters of the alphabet if the writing in the days of the Tanakh wasn't even that alphabet? So I said, you know, that's a discussion in Talmud, actually, whether these halachos date back to Moshe or not. And the Thus, the Talmud assumes that the Hebrew writing Ivrit was around in the days of Moshe and onward. But what's discussed is, was it an alphabet that was used like we use script? So you'll find many writings that way. Was it only the Sadducees who wrote their tefillin with that alphabet? Or was there a shift that we had a tradition from Moshe, the Talmud says, till Rabbi Akiva, till Ezra Sofer, that the script was supposed to change? Two approaches in Talmud. But the Talmud addresses the question. And the Talmud addresses that there were definitely things written in Ivrit, or that writing, that form of writing, from the days of Moshe Rabbeinu onward. So now, is that a question? Or if the Talmud addressed it, I have an angle to understand it. Someone came to me years ago and said, the Code of Hammurabi, why did that exist before the Torah? So I said, I don't know what you see in the Code of Hammurabi that's supposed to be like the Torah. But Chazal already told us that the Torah was offered before the Torah was given to Israel. Was offered in different places in the world, and according to some Midrashim, was offered over 1,000 years before it was offered to Israel, to other nations. So if I find the Torah in other places, long before you found that question, Chazal gave you an answer.
It says in the Code of Hammurabi, an eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth, and iron for an iron.
Did you read the Code of Hammurabi? Because I went through almost all of it, up to the last few chapters where I just got sick and tired of there are so many things that are so different. Almost all of it is different. So you find a line that you think is similar, read the full context, read the full thing. Okay, it doesn't bother me. But again, the idea, well, long before they asked about Hammurabi, the Rambam addresses the question that there are things in Torah that appear long before the Torah. These questions have been addressed. You want to go with the Rambam's route, you want to go the route that I suggested from the Midrashim, doesn't matter, but the questions are not new questions. You like the answers, you don't like the answers, okay, I don't know how I could help you. But I find that most of these people, like you said, a person is a new Chozer B'tshuva, or even those people who unfortunately consider themselves learned, I haven't yet come across... I can say only one professor who I met who was very, very learned, and even he adheres to most of what Orthodoxy says. I'm saying all the other people I've come across who I've had chance to hear, they didn't have a broad knowledge, and they didn't have intellectual honesty. They had an interest to promote their agenda, or an interest to challenge the status quo. And if they had intellectual honesty, they would have at least taken the time to know the text and the context that they're talking about. I haven't found new arguments. I haven't found arguments that I felt were really worth the zeal with which they were presented. A person can have a question. Good, we should all have questions. We're human beings, we're supposed to question. But again, just like a person who would come and challenge quantum physics, we'd ask him, how much do you understand about physics? What could I even answer you? So a person's coming and challenging Torah. Fine, what does he understand of Torah? So he's learned for 2 years and he has questions. Great, it doesn't take a genius to have questions. It might take a genius to answer them, but it doesn't take a genius to ask them. Everyone could ask questions. And today, you just open the internet. You could do 3 searches, and boy, you can ask many questions and question everyone and sound really intelligent. I find that the simplest answer is, how much of Tanakh have you learned? How much of Abarbanel have you learned? What have you learned of all this? You're quoting me one-liners. Do you have any idea what else it says there? Or as Nachmanides asks of the apostate who challenges him in the debate, you're challenging me based on my texts? You want to tell me based on my texts, based on Jewish texts, that this is true? So then let's just ask a simple question. Is this what it says in Shas? A person wants to question me and tell me, in the Talmud in Tractate Baba Basra, it says that the last 8 verses were written by someone other than Moshe. I'll ask them, did you open the Talmud? Did you see that that's one of multiple opinions there? Did you see that the Talmud also says not like that? So there is an opinion that way. I'm not contesting that. But wouldn't it be more logical if we were intellectually honest to say that if the Talmud put forth the idea that the last eight verses were written by Joshua, then the Talmud has also precluded that other verses were written by anyone else. But that they don't say. So I say, wait a second. Are you trusting the Talmud or not? You want to take one line from Talmud? A person came over to me and said a whole new pshat. Why Ephron was a big tzaddik? Because he was selling the Maris HaMachpelah. And, you know, Adam was buried in Maris HaMachpelah. So, of course, he asked the high price of Abraham. And this wonderful apostate was arguing on Chazal. So I looked at the person and I said, Adam is not buried in Maris HaMachpelah. What are you talking about? Ephron had no right to ask for money. So the guy says to me, come on, you're an Orthodox Jew. You're saying that Adam's not buried in Maris HaMachpelah? I said, yeah, Adam's not buried in Maris HaMachpelah. So he says to me, what do you mean? The verse says he is. I said, no, no such verse. Doesn't say it in Torah. Doesn't say it in Chronicles. Doesn't say it. So he says to me, so Adam's not buried in Maris HaMachpelah? I said, no. So he said, okay. Okay. So I said, okay, now that you heard me, the Medrash says that Adam's buried in Maris HaMachpelah. So he says, so? So I said, either you believe the Medrash or you don't believe the Medrash. If you want to believe the Medrash that Adam's buried in the Maris HaMachpelah, you're saying the Medrash knows something you don't know. Then the Medrash also knows that Ephron was a cheat and a steal and a liar. You don't want to believe the Medrash, so don't believe him. But you want to take half the Medrash and then argue on the other half? Either believe it or don't believe it. Which one do you want to do? If you don't believe it, then don't come and argue with me that Adam was buried there. You want to quote me the Gemara in Baba Basra? Well, the Gemara in Baba Basra says two opinions. And even that opinion, if we would be intellectually honest, is saying that the Gemara is saying the rest of Torah is written by Moshe, those last eight verses not. So now I have to answer a Bible critic. He's not being intellectually honest. He has an agenda. I'm saying that these are the types of games they play.
And the Rambam says some of the Midrashim make sense, some of them don't.
I don't think that's what the Rambam says, no.
There are various types of people. Some believe whatever them and they're just as foolish as the people you believe in.
That's not what the Rambam says. You see, that's a misquote. What you're misquoting, unfortunately, is the Rambam in the introduction to the 10th chapter of Sanhedrin. And that's not what the Rambam says. The Rambam says, if one takes the Medrash literally, then one can make a fool of himself and of the Medrash. The Rambam doesn't say the Medrash isn't true. The Rambam says taking it literally can be making a fool of yourself and of the sages. But that, you see, that's a world of a difference in translation. So I can understand that someone with an agenda or someone will quote that or misquote that, but that's not fair. Look at the text. I'm offering you the text. Here's the Rambam. Look it up. See what the Rambam said. Here's the Gemara in Baba Basra. Look it up. But they don't do that. They don't do it, and it's not. I haven't found them to be intellectually honest. And that bothers me. If a person has an intellectually honest question, I respect him.